And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. Folks, I hope that all is well with you, with your family, with your church, with your loved ones, with all of those around you. I trust that all is well and that we are weathering this viral storm, if you will, through the power of prayer and faith in Almighty God. You know how I know that this is not some punishment from God foisted upon us? Because God says, I know the plans I have for you, plans to do you good and not harm, plans to give you hope and a future and an expected end. And when you seek me with all your heart, you'll find it. So I know God is not the problem. God is the answer to the problem. And for those who say, yeah, but you know, this is a judgment and so forth. Now, it is true. The Word of God says that we reap what we sow. You can't sow bad seed and reap a harvest of good things. If you sow the wind, you reap the whirlwind. And there's no question, the world, the, cosmically speaking, the world has sown a lot of bad seed. And as I've said before, these things don't come from a particular person committing a particular sin and then God responds by dumping something on everybody. The universe is out of whack. It is sick. There is a virus that has polluted the entire creation, and it is called sin. And it affects everyone. In fact, it affects everything as well. And so we see it in that context. But the Bible says Christ has redeemed us from the curse of the law. The curse of the law meaning that you sin, you die. You sin, death reigns. Christ has redeemed us from the curse of the law, having been made a curse for us. So the Lord has redeemed us from the curse. So the curse is no longer, well, let's put it this way. The curse no longer has authority to reign over us. That doesn't mean the curse can't or won't touch us, because if we're not believing God ourselves and we're wallowing in fear and anguish and depression just saying, well, woe is me. Why did God let this happen to me? If we take that attitude, we kind of cut off the power of God to help us, to deal with us. We're like Peter walking on water, and suddenly he took his eyes off Jesus and put his eyes on the wind, because you can't see the wind, just like you can't see this virus, put his eyes on the wind and began to sink. God didn't push him down into the water to drown. God didn't try to make him sink. God didn't try to make him drown or make him fear drowning so he could teach him a lesson. No, when Jesus got Peter back in the boat, Jesus said, why did you doubt? Why did you doubt? And so let's not doubt, folks. Let's believe the power of God to deal with this thing. And I know that that will not necessarily help every person, because the Bible says if you don't believe God, you can't expect to receive anything from him. But for those of us who do believe God, let's intercede in behalf of those who don't and ask God to show them mercy, undeserved mercy, and help them and heal them. And just send this virus back to the abyss from whence it sprung. So, folks, I am extremely helpful and hopeful. And by the way, can I say one other thing? This is just on the reportage, the reporting that we're hearing. You know what? Well, maybe a couple of things. I don't know whether I'll get to them both in this segment. But one is, I wish they would stop projecting. I wish they would stop giving these projections. 2.2 million people will die, and then 200,000 people will die, and then 100,000 people will die, and then it may be 50,000 people a month. You know, I don't think that's helpful. And that's just my opinion. I don't think that's helpful, because, you know, the swine flu had a lethality rate of about 0.1%, or about a tenth of a percent. And 61 million, in fact, the CDC says that it may have been as high as 84 million in a recent report that they put out. 84 million people got it, but only 12,469 died. That's only a quarter, that's only a quarter of a tenth of a percent. A quarter of a tenth of a percent. So it was not nearly as lethal even as they were projecting. They were projecting 0.1%, and it was far less lethal than that. And I'm not saying that it could not have been worse. All I'm saying is when we make these pronouncements of doom, I don't think it serves to help anybody. I think it just serves to make people more anxious and more fearful. I think the best thing we could do is report where we are today, where we were yesterday. That's helpful to say, okay, here's where we were, here's where we are now. And to say, here are the things that are being recommended for you to do. And I think if we do that, people can keep their heads on straight and do what they think needs to be done to deal with this thing. And we understand that while there are broad generalizations about the behavior of this virus, we also understand that there's an unpredictability factor. We know that it affects mainly elderly people who already have underlying illnesses and their immune system is compromised. But we're also hearing that it does occasionally affect someone for whom doctors can find no underlying illness. And in fact, I've even heard one report at least that a person with no underlying illness, 49 years old, got it and passed away. Now, we don't know whether that's true or not, but we do know that there are exceptions to the rule. Whatever the generalizations are, there can always be exceptions. And we certainly ought to take that to heart because different people will respond in different ways. But I just wish they'd stop projecting these horrific numbers and just give us the facts about where we are and where we've been. And then we can kind of figure out ourselves, okay, I see how this seems to be progressing. And we can just take it day to day ourselves rather than being told. I mean, right now we've got about 3,800 deaths, right? 3,800 deaths nationwide, 230 million people, forgive me, 330 million people in this country. And we've had 3,800 deaths. And of course, every death is tragic. And I don't say that lightly or glibly, because every one of those people represents a family, represents loved ones, and so forth. So we don't take any of that for granted. We know that many of them are elderly, and many of them are in nursing homes, and many of them have underlying illnesses that this opportunistic virus takes advantage of, and they end up dying. So we know that. But as far as being able to project from going from there, I've heard one person say, the next month there will be 50,000 people dead. Well, this thing showed itself in our country. I think the first patient was discovered in January, even though we know there had to have been other patients prior to that. And that person probably had it, of course, before he or she was discovered. And I think that person was from Iran, as a matter of fact. That's what, 3 months, okay, 3 months. Well, in 3 months, 3,800 people hardly translates to 50,000 in the next month. But that kind of number, that kind of jump just scares the daylights out of people. I mean, like this thing is waiting to just absolutely explode. And it goes back to what I said early on, which is, look, we ought to take this thing seriously. We ought to do everything in our power, everything reasonable to slow and ultimately, of course, stop its spread. But we ought not panic. And those kinds of reports, speculative reports, only serve to engender panic among people. So again, folks, I've been saying to people through my Facebook live streaming and at my church and every time I get a chance, we just all need to stay calm. Just for those of us who know the Lord Jesus Christ, just abide in him. And we know that everything is ultimately going to be all right. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson. Whether you are a Christian or not, you are benefiting from the positive impact of Christianity on your life.
That's the premise of the book by Dr. Rodney Stark, America's Blessings, How Religion Benefits Everyone, Including Atheists. His book is a perfect response to atheistic professors who criticize America and the Christian foundation of this country. This book is a natural one for the professor to write since he has talked about the positive contribution of Christianity to Western civilization. Since we live in a country that Stark believes is unusually religious, we shouldn't be surprised that many of the blessings that Christianity has brought to the world can be found in America. He says people who attend church tend to donate more than others. In previous commentaries, I've talked about the research by Arthur Brooks that found the same things. Rodney Stark says that religious people dominate the ranks of blood donors, to whom even some angry humanists owe their lives. Christians also are far more likely to contribute even to secular charities, to volunteer their times for socially beneficial programs, and to be active in civic affairs. Religious Americans also enjoy better physical health. They have an average life expectancy more than 7 years longer than those of the irreligious. In fact, much of the difference remains even after the effects of clean living are removed. Rodney Stark also talks about another topic we've discussed in previous commentaries, the fertility gap. The fertility rate for religious people is much higher than for secular people. He cites Eric Kaufman's book, Shall the Religious Inherit the Earth? That book points out that when you look at Europe, the population is declining, except in the religious sector. Despite what you might hear from atheists and skeptics, Christianity has been a blessing to America and the world. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
Take Kirby and the Point of View team with you on the go with the Point of View app. Search for Point of View Radio at the Apple or Google Play stores.
Spring Share-a-thon is coming, April 14th through 16th.
Yes, this is Sunny from Texas, and I just can't say enough about AFR. I've been a Christian for many, many years. I'm an outside sales, and driving around every day, it has made so much of a difference in my life. I'm happier. I have a purpose. I feel so much more brave to share my faith, and I'm learning so much every day. I love Alex McFarland and how he teaches us in apologetics, and the whole station is just amazing. I am a contributor now, and I just thank you guys so much.
By the grace of God and with your help, AFR is making a difference. Join us for our 3-day Spring Share-a-thon, April 14th, 15th, and 16th. And thank you for standing with American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here. The death toll in China from coronavirus may be much higher than China is admitting. The self-inflicted wound of shutting down our economy is killing jobs. Can we stop the bleeding? The police chief in Seattle wants you to call 911 if you hear name calling you don't like. And Idaho takes the lead in blunting the transgender agenda. Next on Focal Point.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
So, yes, folks, that is my first request, that these so-called experts would stop projecting numbers. You want to talk to hospitals about that. You want to talk to doctors about that. You want to talk to the medical community about that and say, look, here are some worst-case scenarios. Okay, fine. But making public pronouncements about that, I mean, have enough humility to say, this is what we think based upon mathematical models, but nobody really knows. So it's really best not to scare the wits out of people. I mean, the highest number I heard was 2.2 million deaths. Well, based on a 1% lethality rate, that would mean 220 million Americans would have to have the disease. And it's not progressing anywhere near that level of contagion. It certainly not yet. So that's number one. But here's the second thing. I don't know whether you all are aware of this, but Jim Acosta of the Communist News Network is still allowed to be at the White House briefings. I don't know why he hasn't been permanently kicked out, because to me, he is not a reporter. He is nothing but an antagonist of the President of the United States, who is simply there to call attention to himself and to make news and to get his own name out there by attacking the president. Who elected Jim Acosta to anything? I mean, he doesn't represent anybody. He certainly doesn't represent the American people. He represents Jim Acosta and his own ego trip. But nevertheless, he's there. And in one briefing, they actually spent 20 minutes responding to the attacks. Because when Jim Acosta asks a question, he doesn't ask a question. He makes an attack in the form of a question. They spent 20 minutes dealing with him. And all he's saying is, well, do you think the American people should be angry with you about this? Do you think that the American people should know that you did not do this and you did not do that? I mean, all of this garbage that is nothing but a personal animosity and vendetta of some kind for some reason against this president. And yet when he shut down flights coming in from China, which was the wise thing to do, oh, they called him a racist. Oh, he's a racist. And when he called it the Chinese virus, oh, don't you think that that's inappropriate? Well, that's where it came from. Now, I believe the first patient we had in the United States of America arrived in Tacoma, Washington on January 15th. That's the best information I can get. If any of you have something better or more reliable or any earlier arrival, let us know. And I think that person flew in from Iran. I don't know whether he or she was in Iranian, but that person flew in from Iran, if I'm not mistaken, arrived in Tacoma, Washington on January 15th, and it spread from there, which is, as you all know, Washington State got hit very, very hard with it. Instead of asking these stupid accusatory questions that are intended simply to try to embarrass the president and convince everybody that here again, the president is responsible for this and he's not doing what he's supposed to do. There are some pertinent questions that I think need to be answered. And those of you listening right now who are medical experts, and maybe we even have some experts listening who are engaged in the study and following this virus very closely from a scientific point of view, here's some questions that I would like to have answered, and this is what I think reporters ought to be asking, particularly when they're talking to these medical doctors. And if they can't answer these are questions they ought to try to get the answers to or make sure someone does get the answer to these questions. So, for example, here's question number one I would ask. How does this virus kill people? Because I've never heard anybody really talk about that. We just hear people say it kills people. How? Does it destroy their ability to breathe? In other words, does it suffocate them? Does it arrest their respiratory system? Does it so deprive them of oxygen that they have heart attacks, which is something the elderly would be much more susceptible to? Or does it do something else? I mean, those are just my sort of logical speculations. Does it do something else that we don't understand? I'd like to have that question answered. How exactly does it kill? The second question I ask is, why is it? Are we doing anything to figure out why some people have mild or no symptoms? I mean, literally, some people have reported literally no symptoms. They've tested positive for it, and they have no symptoms. They're not affected at all. They don't know they have it other than somebody saying, you've tested positive. They have no breathing problems. They have no fevers. They have nothing. They go on with their lives. One woman who was on a cruise reported that. She said, I worked out every day. I did everything I normally do. I felt absolutely nothing, but I was tested positive. And then she got, at the end, I guess, over the two-week period, she got her two negative tests, and she was fine and released to go on about her business. But so I'd like to know, how can we figure out what these people have that causes them to respond so well to this thing? And here again, there may not be an answer to that yet, but that's something we certainly ought to be asking because it would help us, I think, to tell others, maybe, to tell others, here are things you can do to make yourself one of those people who, even if you got it, it would not affect you in any profound way. Here's another question I would like to ask. How is it, or is it true, I should say, is it true that you can have it, test negative, and still pass it on? Because I've heard reports to that effect, that you can actually have it, test negative, and still pass it on. Is that true? Because folks, if that's true, that's a very serious situation. I don't know that it's true. I've heard some people report that may well be the case. Now, we know that people said you can test positive, have it, have no symptoms, and still pass it on. I've heard that. But I've also heard that you can actually have it test negative and still be a carrier. And how is that possible? And if that's the case, how do we correct that so that anybody who has it, we get an accurate test and demonstration that they actually have it rather than showing up as a negative test when that person then continues to be a carrier? So to me, these are questions that we ought to be asking of medical experts. Here's another one. To what extent can we apply the strategies of countries that have been more tactical in their approach to this rather than shutting down the whole economy? And you know, folks, I thought about this. We're not just shutting down the economy in America. We're shutting down the society. Think about it. We're shutting down the society because we're actually saying to grandparents, don't be around your grandchildren. We're actually saying to families, don't be around each other. I mean, we are actually shutting down the society. I have questioned whether all of that is truly necessary or is the only option that we have. Let's put it that way. I've said this is serious and we've got to treat it seriously. What I've suggested is we ought to also be considering and looking at other models of approaching this and dealing with this rather than the one-size-fits-all broad shutdown of our whole society, as you say, whole economy. But now it's getting to the point where it's the whole society is being shut down. So to what extent are there strategies that can be used still to be more, shall we say, more surgical, okay, more tactical, more specific in how we address the spread of this disease rather than acting like, as one doctor said, act like everybody's got it. Or because here again, some of these countries I've mentioned have not closed their schools and they're doing fine. They've not closed businesses. They're doing fine. I think it showed up earlier in these cultures and I'm talking about Japan and South Korea and of course the city states of Singapore and then Taiwan, which is amazing that Taiwan is dealing with it because, you know, Taiwan, of course, is very closely connected to China. And yet they seem to have managed this thing very, very well. So I'm just suggesting, you know, what other models have we looked at for containing the spread of this thing, you know, other than we need to have a total shutdown, which is what's often been recommended from some of these circles. So folks, I mean, there are a lot of questions that need to be asked. And I think people like Jim Acosta are doing a great disservice to our country by not asking the pertinent medical questions. Instead of attacking the president of the United States and simply trying to make him look bad. And by the way, you have heard Walmart's now going to do temperature checks at their stores. I guess in order to get into a Walmart now, you've got to have your temperature checked. And look, that raises a whole new set of problems because in order to have your temperature checked, you've got to get within 6 feet of a person, correct? I mean, I assume. I don't know how they're doing it, but I assume you've got to get within 6 feet of a person. And then there's got to be some instrument that is applied to your body. How do we know that that's sterile? How do we know that that's absolutely free of any virus since it can live on surfaces? I mean, so, we've got to consider when we're doing these things, what level of risk are we adding to the process as opposed to reducing risk? And then the last thing, I've raised this before with you all, and I want to start getting your questions and comments, but the last thing I want to raise is I've heard one medical expert say, we've got to somehow begin to distinguish between people who have the coronavirus and actually die from that versus people who have the coronavirus but die from some other underlying cause. Because what I'm told is that right now, anybody who has the virus who dies, the death is attributed to the virus, even though it may not have been the virus that caused the death at all. And that's a distinction that we need to make because it will give us more accurate numbers in terms of the lethality of the disease. So that's just me, a non-medical expert, just applying a little common sense to the situation. Stand by. I want to take your comments.
It's my turn. Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
Isn't it strange how the Father uses different media to speak to us? His most perfect revelation, of course, was His Son. And He speaks to us still through His written word. But this is not the only method He uses. He uses other means, such as a good book, a sermon, or a friend. He even uses the funny papers occasionally. He spoke to me recently through Peanuts. In that Peanuts column, Lucy was shown at her wayside stand with a sign reading, "Psychiatric help, 5 cents, the doctor is in." Well, old Charlie Brown comes along and says, "I'm in sad shape. What can you do when you don't fit in? What can you do when life seems to be passing you by?" To this, Lucy replies, "Follow me. I want to show you something. See the horizon over there? See how big it is? See how much room there is for everybody? Have you ever seen another world?" "No," says Charlie Brown. "As far as you know, this is the only world there is, right?" "Right," replies Charlie Brown. Lucy shouts, "Well, live in it then." Whereupon Charlie Brown does one of his famous somersaults. Many of us are like Charlie Brown. We think we're in sad shape. We mope along with our fears and worries. We go in for self-pity. We look here and there for help without finding it. We think the world has given us a raw deal. We go around hunting only for the bad. We're in bad shape ourselves. We get to thinking that the faith of the Nazarene is dull and ordinary to many who bear His name or down at the mouth. Then along comes the divine psychiatrist. He takes us by the hand and shows us the wide and wonderful world in which we live, this mystery and wonder of life, this sparkling bit of time and space that is all ours for a brief moment of history. He tells us that we are the salt of the earth, the light of the world. He tells us there is a Father who knows us better than we know ourselves, a Maker that is closer than the air we breathe. He says that our Father loves us beyond our comprehension, even more than an earthly father loves his son. But He does more than this. He shames us for our timidity and our crankedness. He dissolves our guilt and restores our faith in God and ourselves. He Himself is our key to abundant living. He shouts to us across the centuries to live in our world as though we were citizens of the eternities. It is He and He alone who puts meaning into our existence and purpose into our lives. He gives the ring of divine ordination to the most trivial of all occupations. Through His speaking, we hear Him saying that He came that we could find life, abundant life. Great is the number seeking for that abundant life. It's a pity that they think it can be found in rings and things. If we're in sad shape, we might not need to turn Charlie Brown's somersault, but we might need to take another look at our world and our God and ourself. Who knows? We might just want to turn that somersault with old Charlie Brown after taking that look.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
And we're back. The number here is 888-589-8840. I want to get to your calls and comments. The lines are filling up already. And by the way, any of you have any questions that you feel need to be answered that you're not getting answers to, that you kind of got you scratching your head thinking, well, why doesn't anybody give us this information? Why don't we hear more about this, as opposed to these wild speculations? Right now we've got 873,700 cases of coronavirus worldwide. You know how many we had of the swine flu? 1.4 billion. 1.4 billion cases. And based on the same lethality rate, folks, I mean, that would have been a whole, I don't have the numbers in front of me of the number of deaths worldwide. We know we had 12,469 deaths here in the United States of America, 61 million cases, and CDC saying there may have been more cases than that, and therefore there might have been more deaths than that. But we've got 185,900 cases in the United States right now, 185,900 as of this morning, and 3,800 deaths. I find it very, very difficult how we're going to go from that to 2 million dead in, as one speculator has, 2.2 million people could die if we do nothing. Well, we're not doing nothing. We're doing something, and we're doing a lot of something, by the way. So I just wish they'd stop speculating and just focus on where we are right now and where we've come from. And in 3 months, that's where we are based on the first known case in the United States of America in Tacoma, Washington. That's where we are right now. There would have to be a surge unlike anything we've ever seen before to get from there, from 3,800 deaths in 3 months to 2.2 million. I just don't think it's helpful to be throwing those kinds of numbers out there. I really don't. By the way, one other thing, and then I'm going to come right to the lines. Governor Ralph Northam, some people have given him a nickname based on those pictures that emerged and some of the comments he made about abortion, but I'll just leave that for the moment. He issued an order, and he cited Article 5, Section 7 of the Constitution of Virginia, and then he cited Section 44-146.17 of the Code of Virginia for the authority to order a lockdown. Oh, sorry about that, folks. For the justification and the authority to order a lockdown. Well, I looked up both of those statutes. I mean, I looked up the Virginia Constitution and looked up the section that he cites. And folks, the section that he cites says this. He shall be the director of emergency management, the governor, and he shall take such action from time to time as is necessary for, listen to this, the adequate promotion and coordination of state and local emergency services activities relating to the safety and welfare of the Commonwealth in time of disaster. He shall take action for the adequate promotion and coordination of state and local emergency services activities. That doesn't say anything about ordering the people of Virginia. You read it for yourself. Section 44-146-17 and Article 5, Section 7 of the Virginia Constitution. Now, I know all of you, of course, most of you don't live in Virginia. I would just suggest this. If your governor has issued a lockdown order, find out what the authority is that he's citing for his ability to do that, and then see if it matches up with what he's doing. Because here again, folks, the Constitution doesn't take a holiday because we're in a crisis. And we've all got to remember, we are a constitutional republic. And not allow that to be destroyed and trampled by people who were simply using a good crisis, as Rahm Emanuel said, as an excuse. So let's go to your calls. We've got first call from Ohio. Tommy, welcome.
How you doing, Bishop? I'll tell you another thing. With them shutting people off from traveling across state lines, that's against our constitutional rights, too, because I was a truck driver for 20 years, and I know better. That is against our rights to shut people off from crossing state lines. I mean, we are a country of one. Mm-hmm. How do they have the authority to do this? And the social medicine gave me a flu shot back in the end of October, 1st of November. I was one of the first cases of this virus because the very next day I got sick and I waited 2 weeks. It just come to mind to stay away from the kids, grandkids, for 2 weeks until I got better. Well, I still passed it to them 2 weeks later, and they were sick, and we kept passing it back and forth. I was sick for a month or more.
Oh,
and
wow.
I still think I'm carrying this virus, but I don't have any symptoms anymore.
Oh, so are you still quarantined, Tommy?
No, I can still feel it in my lungs, but back when I was real sick, I really thought I was going to die. I actually left my door unlocked because I live alone, and I don't have any transportation. And I left my door unlocked in case I did die in the middle of the night, that someone could get in and get me without, you know, busting my door down. But, and another thing, this, these numbers that they keep shoveling out, they just don't match. I mean, this is ridiculous that they have quarantined everybody when 2 weeks is not going to be enough. I don't care what they say.
Well, Tommy, let me ask you. Tommy, hold on. I'm so glad you called, because this, we want to hear from people like you. Now, you said you thought you were going to die. Was the biggest problem that you had breathing? Was that what made you feel so bad and frightened you most?
Yes, it was. But I'm a smoker. I've been a smoker for 40 years.
Ah.
And so that was kind of playing into it also. But yeah. My chest hurt bad. And I could feel my breathing. I mean, I'd wake up in the middle of the night and couldn't breathe.
Well, Tommy, were you able to stop smoking while you knew you had the disease, or while you knew it was affecting you? Were you able to stop?
Well, not completely, but I slowed down quite a bit. But you know, wow. I stopped.
Tommy, are you going to quit smoking, my friend?
I'm working on it.
Okay. Tommy, listen, man, thank you so much for the call and for your honesty. We're going to be praying for you, Tommy. And man, you represent the best of America, in the sense that you understand that we have constitutional rights. And even though you've had the disease and you've quarantined yourself, you still have a problem with these orders coming down telling people what they can and cannot do. So Tommy, I'm with you. We're praying for you, and may you and your family all be healed and whole and well very, very soon. So thank you for the call, Tommy. God bless you. Let's go to Rick in North Carolina. Rick, welcome.
Good afternoon, Bishop. Enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I agree with you with those numbers that they put out yesterday, or have been putting out. I mean, all it does is just increases the people's anxieties and fears. And you know, I don't think it's really a need to just come out with those numbers like this, because where we at now, and you say those numbers, I mean, I'm a believer, but it kind of, you know, gets on the mic. And I go, well, I mean, how is all this? How do they project such a rate, you know, so high? And, Back in January, I never forget, I got sick New Year's Day, and I was sick for about 7 days. And I told my mom, I said, I think I need to go to urgent care, because all the medicine I was taking, you know, it really wasn't helping. And I went to urgent care. The doctor said I had sinus infection, some kind of upper respiratory thing that was going on. So, you know, I'm not claiming anything, but I don't know if I could have had something back then. It took me about two to three weeks to really get over it.
And were you having difficulty breathing, Rick?
It seemed like it at night when I was lying down. You know, it seemed like it was. Yeah, I mean, it was okay. It started off with a.
All right, Rick, I've got to go. But listen, thank you so much for the call. Folks, the number is 888-589-8840. I'm so glad to hear from you all, because you all are the ones who are living this stuff, and we want to hear what you, the American people, are saying. Back in a moment.
Science is always a little bit behind the scriptures.
Speaking about God's marvelous design for life, Dr. Bill Lyle on Focus on the Family Minute.
Even when you look back in Psalm 139, where the psalmist is saying, you know what, I don't understand how all this happened. All I know is that I was knit together in my mother's womb, and I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. We know that conception takes place, and that DNA is in that one cell. That one cell divides into 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. And then how does it know when it gets to a certain division and one cell says to the other one, you know what, I don't want to be an exact copy of you. I want to start the entire neurologic system. They all have the exact same blueprints in DNA. We see it, but we don't know how it happened. So how does it happen? It had to be the hand of God that creates a miracle there from just two cells, and it develops into 60 trillion cells into who we are as humans now.
More from Dr. Lyle at familyminute.org.
Peace in the midst of a pandemic? It's possible.
The Bible words are our hope.
Billy Graham.
God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear. My prayer today is that we will trust in Him.
We'd love to pray with you. Call 888-388-2683. 888-388-2683. Or go to billygraham.org.
How much does a 6-month subscription to the AFA Journal cost? It's free! For 6 months, you can read articles and updates in the pro-life movement. You can read about family-friendly entertainment, laws that may impact your family or your business, and of course, what the American Family Association is up to and how you can help. So what are you waiting for? Visit afajournal.org for your free 6-month subscription to the AFA Journal.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I was finishing undergrad and got credit cards because I couldn't work full-time. So that started the credit card journey for me.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
And then when I got married, we combined our credit card debt and it became impossible to pay off on our own. At that point, I was like, I don't know where to turn. And then I found Trinity.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
I initially was scared to call, and immediately I felt relief. I mean, in a matter of 3 years, we've already paid down $20,000 in credit card debt, which is huge.
Call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
And we're back. Folks, I've said this before, and I know there are others who would disagree, but I think we've got the best callers in the world. I mean, really, we do. Look, I want to remind everybody that this program and all of our programming on AFR can be heard on podcast as well. All you have to do is go to afr.net, and our programs are usually up within a couple of hours after they've aired. So if you know somebody who you think would really benefit from hearing the program, maybe there's a particular caller that you thought, wow, that person really needs to, I want my relative or my friend or this person or that person to hear that, you could just refer them to the podcast, go to afr.net, and they will find recordings of all of our programs. They can go to The Awakening, and they can listen to the program all over again. And it's very helpful to us to know that you all are doing that and referring people to that, because we know that everybody can't listen to the program at a particular time, although we probably have a lot more people at home listening right now than we have here in the last in the recent past, because they are not working during the day. So, all right, let's go to, we've got a paramedic on the line. So let's go to Keith in Ohio. Keith, welcome. Thanks for calling. So you're a paramedic, huh?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Thank you, Bishop. Thank you for all you do. Love your program, and bless you, sir.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I've been a paramedic for about 18 years, and I worked in Central Ohio as a paramedic. And you brought up a few questions, and I can, with my simple brain, I'm by no means would ever consider myself an expert, but I have looked at a lot of data and research, and okay. I've been on top of this and looking at it since, I've been following it since January. So, the first thing you ask is how it kills. So, it's acute respiratory distress syndrome is the main way it kills. So that, and ARDS, they call it ARDS, the acronym ARDS. So the physiologically what happens with that is, your lungs get inflamed. So this inflammation causes fluid to, the fluid builds up in the alveoli of the lungs, and that oxygen exchange isn't able to take place. And, okay. And there's also research that's showing that it breaks the surfactant down. Your lungs have to slide, and there's what's called surfactant that allows that to happen, and that infection, basically pneumonia, that gets in there as a factor in that too.
Okay.
And there's additional research showing that cardiac the fibers of the muscle can actually be affected by that, and And a lot of people are going into cardiac arrest that don't even have lung issues. But yeah, pneumonia.
Oh, you mean, in other words, without the lung issues? Because I thought, you know, the inability to get oxygen to any part of the body, particularly the heart, for example, is mm-hmm. likely to lead to cardiac arrest, particularly, again, if you have any underlying cardiac problems. But you're saying yeah. even without the lung problems, people are going into cardiac arrest behind this?
It's not as common, but yes, he's actually a paramedic in Italy that happened to. He went in cardiac arrest, and then they found out after the fact that he had COVID. So yeah, I mean, it's not definitely not as common. The pneumonia is the main driving factor of how it's leading to deaths.
Pneumonia. So, yeah. so you're saying pneumonia is the main driving factor when the lungs start having these problems. They become more
Correct.
Susceptible to pneumonia, which is something, of course, that commonly kills very elderly people.
That leads into your next question of how it affects people differently. Well, you know, it's like you had been saying about the flu. It's really no different than the flu. We know that the flu affects, and sometimes we don't know exactly why. It can come down to immune systems of individuals genetics and that kind of thing, but I mean, obviously, we do know for sure that it's what's called comorbidities. So it's basically
right.
underlying pre-existing conditions, and those would be the big ones that they're finding is high blood pressure, obesity, and diabetes. And unfortunately, that covers a lot of Americans.
Yeah, it does. And Keith, let me ask you one more question. I've got a lot of other people on the line, but look. The caller who called and said he smoked and didn't quit smoking while he said he slowed down, but he kept smoking. That can't be helpful. And we're not hearing any indications of whether this affects smokers in, shall we say, a more profound way than it might affect a person who's not a smoker.
100%. That's actually as big of a factor, but that's why it killed so many people in China, because a lot of the Chinese population smokes. And then with Italy, they have an older population. And, you know, typically older people have more uh-huh. pre-existing conditions as well. And so that's a lot of the reasons why it affects older people. But one last thing to add real quick, too, about, is it true that it can be negative but pass on to somebody when testing negative? Now, I don't know the answer to that, but I can tell you that you can be asymptomatic, meaning
right.
you show no signs or symptoms and be able to. In fact, there's studies that show that when you are in the early stages of it, you can be the most you have the most viral load in the early stages and be able to transfer that
without having any symptoms at all. In other words, your life is unaffected, but you're a carrier. So.
Yep.
Keith, man, yep. Listen, please thank you for listening and call me again, okay, Keith, because I'd love to hear from you again. You've been extremely helpful. In fact, you've given me more information in this brief conversation than these so-called big-time experts have given us. So thank you for the call, Keith. We really appreciate it. Let's see. Thank you for your patience. Let's go to Shirley in Tennessee. Shirley, welcome.
Oh, thank you. And I want to say we have the best bishop in the world, too.
Thank you.
Since you complimented the callers. But he answered most of what I was going to say, so I just wanted to add this. Remember that this is acute respiratory distress syndrome. Acute means quick. So people may be fine one minute, kind of like the flu, and then all of a sudden stuff just comes down on you and you swell up and you get very sick. I'm not medical, but I've been studying a lot of this also. And some of the people are saying, some of the health people are saying maybe people should increase their exercise and things and take, if you're healthy, inositol cystone is NAC supplements, because 3 out of 4 people who got the flu when they were on NAC did not have any symptoms, no swelling of the lungs or anything. It's NAC. It's an herbal supplement.
Okay.
And lastly, I wanted to say, in the past, you know, plagues broke out amongst the children of Israel with Moses. And what Moses did was prayed and cried out to the Lord and said, Lord, we have sinned. Forgive us, Lord. And please stay this plague. And I believe that that's going to be the ultimate answer for us to get on our knees, ask God for forgiveness for all this murdering and abortion and stuff that's happened and say,
all
God.
All right, Shirley. Thank you, Shirley. Really appreciate the call. I'm running out of time. I want to get some of these other folks who've been waiting. Let's go to Sean in Michigan. Sean, welcome.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Let me turn off the speaker here. I just wanted to answer one of your questions about the temperature testing there at Walmart and other other stores. They have non-contact temperature sensors. I don't know that they're medical. I know that my shop has industrial laser temperatures, temperature sensors. Yeah, we use them all the time. Or actually, maintenance does, but I'm indirect labor, so I'm closely associated with maintenance.
So you don't have to get within 6 feet of a person to read their temperature with one of these devices?
I would, no, you don't. It'll read just fine at 6 feet or maybe a little more.
All right, Sean, I'm running out of time, but Sean, call me again. Thank you for the call. We really appreciate it. Let's get Dwayne. Dwayne of South Dakota. Dwayne, welcome.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to share this little story. My company has been losing its head ever since this pandemic began, and we're receiving a daily email now sent out by this HR lady, and she's no medical expert, but she's just doing her best, I guess. And yesterday we received an email saying that we're living in unprecedented times, and this will surely be remembered for generations to come. And that seemed pretty excessive to me. So I started doing some research, and one of the last deadly plagues in the United States was called the Hong Kong flu of 1968. It infected and killed about 1 million people worldwide and killed about 100,000 Americans. So I asked my surviving grandparents, do you remember the Hong Kong flu of 1968? They were in their 20s at the time. And they didn't, of course. It was just like a bad flu season. They didn't shut down the economy at the time. Uh-huh. They didn't shut down the nation. So it's seems pretty inaccurate to me to say that this will be remembered for generations to come. And I think a lot of this panic is caused by the internet.
Yeah, Dwayne, thank you so much for the call, Dwayne. We're pretty much out of time, folks, and we got as many of you in as we could. And I'll say it again, you all are the best listeners, the best callers in the radio industry, because this has been very, very informative, been very helpful to me and helpful to everybody out there listening. So thank you all for the calls. I would agree with what Dwayne just said. There is a lot of hyperbole going on, and there's no question, folks, it has infected the entire country. And to try to talk about this in a rational way, to try to raise any questions, like I've raised questions about the constitutional prerogatives of a governor or mayor to give orders to anybody, which I just don't think they have the constitutional ability to do that. I think all they can do is say, here's what we think needs to happen, and we're asking for everyone's cooperation. And in most cases, if it's reasonable, the American people are going to respond appropriately and responsibly. But as far as giving orders are concerned, I just shared with you all, the governor of Virginia has no constitutional or statutory authority under the laws of Virginia to order anybody, any civilians, any people who don't work for the state to do anything. And I think it's appropriate to raise those questions, even in the midst of this crisis. And I think, we've got to find an appropriate balance here, because as the last caller just pointed out, what do we do for the next one? We're going to shut down the economy all over again? We can't. So, folks, thank you all for listening. Thank you for your prayers. Keep this network in your prayers, because obviously we're feeling the pressure as well. And pray for all of these talk show hosts, and pray for our management and staff and all the people working. And remember, we cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.